You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sports Miles Premier League Preview Podcast. I'm Pascal Lemaire and I'm here with Barney Corkhill to look ahead to Match Day 13 as top flight action returns after the international break. We're almost a third of the way through the season now, and at the top it's Manchester City and Arsenal still level there on 26 points. Just one further back are the Wily Foxes, Leicester City, who are in fine form and could incredibly go top this weekend. The pick of the games is probably the Saturday evening contest between City and Liverpool, but we start with the other Manchester club as United travel to Vicarage Road to face Watford on Saturday lunchtime. Barnes, let's start with United sitting fourth after their 2-0 win over West Brom.
Yeah, it was a good win for United. It wasn't the easiest game for them, especially with, you know, all the talk about their attack and how they're misfiring a bit at the moment. The crowd, you could tell they were getting a bit restless, but it was always the type of game they're going to have to be very patient in. You know, West Brom, they set out just to defend and defend and defend and maybe catch them on the break, which they almost did, but United eventually broke them down. You always thought that they would, and it took a very good goal from Lingard to open the score, and fantastic finish from such a young player to show composure, to control the ball and just guide it into the bottom corner. Brilliant one. And they didn't get their second goal until late on. McCauley conceding the penalty, Mata sticking it away. Obviously McCauley got sent off after that, so West Brom ended the game with 10 men, but It was a stubborn performance from West Brom. United had to be patient, but at the end of the day, West Brom never really looked like they were going to win it. They didn't have a single shot on target, so it was a fairly comfortable win for United in the end, but they had to work hard for it. It was an important one as well, particularly considering the other results that happened that weekend. You know, City and Arsenal both drew. All the teams around United in the table dropped points, apart from Leicester really. Tottenham dropped points, West Ham dropped points, further down the table Liverpool and Chelsea both lost again. So a very good weekend for United and a very good win over West Brom.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned Lingard's goal there. He obviously got the England call up on the back of that, and certainly maybe a bit too soon for that. But given, you know, England had a lot of injuries recently, and you know, fair play to him for getting the call up. And you know, Smalling, he missed the game against France, the second friendly, and he's now doubtful for this game, which would be a real blow if Smalling misses this game, because he's been so key to their defence this season. You know, United, they've got the best defence in the league this year. They're not conceded in five games. It's like 555 minutes since they conceded a goal in any competition. I think it's the best run since they had a six game streak between 2004-2005 and 2005-2006. So defensively they're so sound at the moment, but Smalling, if he's missing, that would be such a blow to them, because he's been one of the standout defenders this season. And Martial as well, he left Wembley on crutches from the France game, and that would be a big blow, because you know, he's come in, he's done really well for them, and certainly even for France in that friendly there, he really impressed me. You know, on the ball he looked very classy, and apart from maybe Pogba, he was probably France's best player in that game. So really, really impressive. But if both of those have to miss this one, it'd be a real blow for United. And like you say, they're looking pretty good in the table now with those sides dropping points. But if those two miss this one, it could be a big blow for them.
Yeah, Smalling, obviously a huge miss to the defence. But I think Martial could be an even bigger blow if he is out for a while, because they haven't got too many options in attack. They've got players coming back to fitness in defence, but in attack they've only got Wayne Rooney. We know how he's misfiring a bit in the Premier League so far this season. Obviously scored for England with a good volley at the back post against France, but for Manchester United it just hasn't really been happening for him so far this season. Wilson's probably the only other striker in the squad. I suppose he could play Memphis Depay up there, but it hasn't really happened for him. You know, I mentioned the crowd getting frustrated with their lack of attacking football. They're willing, urging the team on to attack, and of course United want to attack, but it's just not easy for them at the moment. They failed to score on three of the last five Premier League games. You know, Rooney was a bit better for England when he was playing out wide, so whether Van Gaal chooses to play him there, again, it'll probably be determined by how serious the injury to Martial is, because Martial looked bright for France. He didn't do too much against a good England defence, but he did look bright, and he certainly looked bright since coming in for United as well. So there are concerns up front for United, but they'll look at this upcoming run and think that they've got a chance to really put pressure on United and on City and Arsenal. Sorry, they're only 2 points behind at the moment. They've got a couple of tough fixtures after this one against Leicester and West Ham, which they're not going to be easy, but at the same time, they're not two of the big boys exactly. And then after that, they've got Bournemouth, they've got Norwich after that, and then Stoke, who they fancy their chances against as well. So they've got a fairly kind run coming up, but they'll expect to get quite a few points on the board and keep the pressure on the teams above them.
Yeah, definitely. I think United, when they look at that run, they might think there's a real chance here, considering they're only 2 points you know, behind the Leeds. Maybe, you know, being top, you know, come Christmas time, come the turn of the year, there's a real chance of that for them. And They'll go to Watford here. You know, they'll be favourites going into the game for sure, because Watford last time out, they had their two-game winning streak ended at Leicester. You know, they had two impressive 2-0 wins before that game, but, you know, going to Leicester, you know, the form Leicester in at the moment, doing so, so well up there. And, you know, the first half, it was a fairly cagey game. You know, Leicester's games usually contain a lot of goals, but Watford, you know, they're the opposite. They don't usually have many goals in their games, and certainly the first half, there wasn't too much in it. Second half, then, you know, it was the sort of Aurelio Gomez horror show, wasn't it? You know, he's been a very good keeper for them so far this season, but, you know, he let Kante's, you know, that one dribble across the line. Terrible piece of goalkeeping, then concedes the penalty, which Vardy stuck away. You know, Watford did fight back. They got their penalty, which Troy Deeney got, you know, getting his another goal for him this season. But in the end, you know, they didn't quite have enough against the Leicester side, that you have to say, full of confidence. And it's not the worst defeat for Watford. That leaves them 11th in the table, but I think certainly after what was a fairly solid first half showing, to concede the goals they did, which were largely, you know, Gomez's fault, was a disappointment.
Yeah, an extra disappointment as well, considering how well they've defended for most of the season. They'd only conceded 10 goals going into that match, so to give away two goals like that. As you mentioned, Gomez has been fantastic for Watford since joining them, but obviously he had a bit of a reputation for Tottenham for letting a few blunders in, so they'll be hoping that that doesn't affect him too much, because it did seem to affect him when he made blunders at Tottenham. But as you mentioned, 8 points off the drop zone, 11th place, they've got to be happy with that after 12 games in the season. They're looking strong, they're looking like they are capable, they've got the tools to stay up. Obviously Icalo hit the post in that Leicester game as well, linking up with Deeney, and those two, we've mentioned them a lot already this season, could prove to be vital, could prove to be the difference between them staying up and going down. The concern is that they've lost two of their last three at home without scoring, both against Palace and Arsenal, which are tricky games. Again, this is another tricky match, so they haven't had the easiest run at home, but home form is where you'd expect the majority of the points for a relegation threatened team to come. After this game, though, they do have a decent run of fixtures. Got Aston Villa away, Norwich home, and then Sunderland away. So they'll fancy a chance of picking some more points up. This one, it's going to be tough to see them getting any much out of the game. But the next three coming up, they'll fancy a chance of getting perhaps 6-7 points from them and staying fairly comfortably clear of the drop zone.
Yeah, so what's your prediction for this game then?
Yeah, as I say, it's tough to see Watford getting too much out of it. I don't see too many goals because, as we know, United have had their struggles up front. Watford generally tight at the back, but I can see United running out 1-0 winners here.
1-0, yeah. I fancy United to keep a clean sheet as well, but I think they might just get two, so I'm going to go for a 2-0 away win. So both picking United to win this one.
Okay, on to the 3 p.m. and we start at Stamford Bridge, where struggling Chelsea host Norwich. Pascal, we've got to start with the hosts here. Mourinho's still in the job, but it's now 7 defeats from their 12 league games this season.
Yeah, it's been a shocking title defence, hasn't it? We've talked about it so many times. And those 7 defeats, that's more than Mourinho's, you know, ever lost in a single league campaign before. So it's been disastrous so far. Another defeat. That's now 3 league games in a row they've lost. First time since October 1999 that's happened. So really, really bad there, you know, the results. But in terms of the performance against Stoke, it was much better. You know, the other sort of 6 games they'd lost this season, they looked completely below par. But against Stoke, they were the better team for the most part. You know, they had plenty of chances, especially in the first half. You know, they hit the post, Butland made some really key saves as well, but they couldn't quite find the goal. And then Arnautovic did get the goal for Stoke. Very, you know, acrobatic finish. Good goal from him. And, you know, that was all that Stoke needed in the end. So, you know, for Chelsea to lose like that, so disappointing. You know, in terms of the table, it leaves them 16th sitting there. So, you know, really, really, you know, their title defence has been absolutely shocking. But if there was a positive, it was the performance that was better. And now they've had the international break, you know, 2 weeks to sort of reflect on that performance and hopefully improve on it. But, you know, Hazard could be a doubt for this game. He's carrying a knock. So if he's missing, that'd be a blow. But the performance was better. But, you know, it's another defeat for Mourinho. And, you know, they certainly, this game against Norwich, they have to win this. Because if they don't, you know, surely maybe he'll have to go.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot made of Mourinho's moaning so far this season. Obviously, he wasn't in the stadium for the match last time out because he was serving his one-game stadium ban. But for once, he could bemoan some pretty bad luck for Chelsea. The ball just would not go in for them. Last season, they would have comfortably won that match. They would have scored a few goals. But this season, it's just not going their way. It's actually the first time they failed to score in the league since the 3-0 defeat to City on the second weekend of the season. So they are generally scoring goals. We talked about their defensive record. That's what's been letting them down so far this season. But as you mentioned, it is such a terrible start to the season. 3 points off the relegation zone now, which is, it'd be slightly worrying after 12 games of the season if you're a Chelsea fan. we're still talking about them as potential top four contenders, but you know, the 15 points adrift of the top two now, Manchester City and Arsenal, and they're 13 points adrift of the top four, so they've got a long way to go to even get Champions League football next season. For them to miss out on Champions League football would be absolutely disastrous. I wouldn't be surprised to see some pretty heavy investment made in January to make sure they get that, but they need a big run of form. They need to get some wins on the board. Before that Stoke match, you couldn't really see it coming, but as you mentioned, the performance against Stoke was a lot better, and they'll be much more confident going into this game despite losing against Stoke than they perhaps were going into that Stoke game. So there are positives for them, but they need those results on the ball quickly. They need to reignite their season soon, otherwise it is just going to peter out. And at the moment, if they don't get a few wins before Christmas, it's very hard to see them even getting the top four or even Europa League football, to be honest.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Yeah, and you look at just the table, you see City at the top there with plus 17 goal difference, Chelsea at minus 7 with 16 goals scored, 23 conceded. That's, you know, 24 goals worse than City's, which is just incredible for a, you know, a side that won the league last season. That's the same, exactly the same sort of for and against total as Norwich, who they play here. And you know, that's the team that won the Championship playoffs last year and the team that won the Premier League. It's incredible that they are, you know, have exactly the same record this season. So, so bad from Chelsea. And like you said there, there could be, you know, Abramovich could splash the cash in January, and I saw a report the other day linking them with maybe going in for Cristiano Ronaldo, because there's, you know, there's always that there's the odd report that he might be a bit unhappy at Real Madrid, and the report said that, you know, he'd be willing to send Hazard, Oscar and Matic the other way to get Ronaldo and obviously then build the team around him, because I certainly think it could be a decent move for them, because the way, you know, so many of their players have dropped off this season. Costa doesn't look like he can lead the line. Hazard looks a shadow of the player that won Player of the Year last season. So if they were to make something like that happen, you know, make a huge player, say like a Ronaldo, come in and try and build a team around him, it could work. But like you say, if they don't have a good run between now and, say, the new year, even their chance of finishing in the top four might be over by, you know, 2016. So a massive, massive sort of couple of months coming up for the club now.
Yeah, and in this weekend, they're coming up against the Norwich side, who will be more confident themselves than they were going into the last match. Finally ended a four-game losing streak, a six-game winless streak against Swansea. A good win. We know Swansea aren't in the best form themselves, but they're still a good team. It was still a good result for them. 1-0, clean sheet at home. Their first clean sheet in the league so far this season, which was a big monkey off Alex Neil's back, because defensively they haven't been great. They've obviously conceded six goals against Newcastle. They have one of the worst records in the league, so to get that clean sheet against a Swansea team who have got a lot of attacking threats, even though we know the likes of Gomez are struggling at the moment, have struggled since August, they do still have threats, so to have kept that clean sheet is a big thing for them. And at Leeds Chelsea, obviously another 3 points in the relegation battle. They're now 4 points clear of the bottom three. It is 1 point clear of Chelsea in the table, which they would have taken if you offered them at the start of the season, because they would have thought they'd be a bit higher up. But as you say, 4 points, they're looking like a more solid team than the others down there, the likes of Bournemouth, Sunderland, Aston Villa, Newcastle. They do look a bit more solid than them. And from the first 12 games of the season, if I was to hazard a guess at which of those five would stay up, Norwich would probably be my first choice out of them. They've had a bad run of results, but against Manchester City before the game against Swansea, they weren't too bad. They only narrowly lost in that game. So there are positive signs for Alex Neil going forward. And I don't think he'd be too displeased with where his side are after 12 games of the season.
Yeah, I would counter that, though, by saying that, you know, you probably say that of their sort of 12 games so far, that the bulk of them have been against sides who they might fancy getting something against. Just when you look at their sort of run of fixtures coming up between now and up to Boxing Day, you know, Chelsea away here is a difficult game. Then they host Arsenal, go to Watford, and we know that Watford have been a fairly solid team all season. Then they host Everton, go to United, go to Spurs in their sort of next games up until Boxing Day. It's a really, really tough run of form for them, and they certainly, like you said, they're 4 points above the bottom three at the moment. But if they go on a really terrible run here and say lose maybe five of those next seven games, then they could be down in the bottom three, maybe even bottom come, you know, Christmas, New Year. And you know, the record doesn't read very well for teams that are bottom, you know, halfway through the season. So it's a big period coming up for Norwich. And I mean, they've been linked with strikers quite a lot at the moment. I've seen them linked with Dwight Gayle, and I think that's certainly an area they need to address. They haven't really found a number one striker this year. You know, Jerome's played up there. You know, they've got Lewis Graben, who's not really been playing. Then Mbakani's come on and looked quite bright. He's played a part in three of the last five goals. So he has been, you know, he's sort of assumed that number one striker's role ahead of Cameron Jerome. But I think someone like Dwight Gayle could work for them, because he's a poacher. You know, they've got a lot of creative players, the likes of, you know, Houlihan in there, who will create chances. And maybe just someone like that, who's a bit more, you know, alive in the penalty box might work for them, because at the moment they don't really have that kind of player. You know, you would say Gary Hooper was that sort of player, but it hasn't worked out for him there. He's been loaned to Sheffield Wednesday, so it looks like a striker is going to be their number one, you know, priority in January. It'd be interesting to see who they try and get.
So a struggling attack versus a struggling defence, which way do you see this one going?
Yeah, I'm definitely back in Chelsea here. I think just the 2 weeks off, you know, the performance was a lot better against Stoke, like we said, and I certainly think that, I mean, it'd be incredible if Norwich do get anything at all from this game, and I mean, I'm not expecting Chelsea to put, you know, five or six past them, but I think it'll be fairly comfortable. I'm going to go for a 3-0 home win.
Yeah, I agree with the home win. I said in the last set of recordings we did that I was done back in Chelsea, but I can't really see them not winning this one. The performance, as we mentioned, against Stoke was much improved, and if they put in another display, they're bound to score. They were very unlucky not to score last time out, so I think I'm going to go for a comfortable Chelsea win as well. I'm going to go for 2-0, so we're both going for fairly comfortable Chelsea victories here.
Over to Goodison Park, where Everton are hosting the league's bottom side, Aston Villa. Barnes, let's start with Villa. Last time out, Remy Gard's first game in charge, and he got a 0-0 draw with the league leaders.
Yeah, fantastic result to start off with. We said before the game that anything they could get from that match would be a bonus. It's about as hard as you could wish for as a first game in charge, but just the difference between that and the Tim Sherwood era when they lost 7 in a row going into that match was pretty plain to see. They did ride their luck at times. Man City, on another day, probably would have run out 2-3-0 winners in that game. They dominated the match, really. Kevin De Bruyne missed that sitter from a couple of yards out when he tried the fancy flick to finish it off, when he could have just finished it pretty comfortably. Fernando hit the bar late on from close range when, again, he should have scored. Delph came dangerously close to scoring on his return to Villa Park when, on two occasions, there was one, that one which just rolled agonisingly wide of the post, and the one towards the end where Guzan just clawed it away from his head at the back post. So Villa, they did need to ride their luck at times, but defensively they've been pretty poor all season, and to keep a clean sheet against the league leaders is a fantastic achievement for them. Still bottom of the league, still 5 points from safety, so they're by no means out of danger yet, but the early signs are certainly positive for Remy Gard. He seems to have sorted them out. They could do with a win. They haven't won in 11 Premier League games now, but at least they've stopped the rot with those 7 defeats, so things are looking positive, and it was certainly an encouraging start for Remy Gard.
Yeah, it definitely was, but still, you know, it's only 5 points from their 12 games. It's the worst ever total at this stage of a Premier League season, so he's got loads to do if he is going to keep them up. And you know, it didn't get any better for him over the international break. They lost a Mavi to a season-ending ACL injury, and he sort of was a bit in and out of the team under Sher, but when he did play, I know Villa fans, you saw them on Twitter, they really liked him as a player, and to lose him for the rest of the season is a real blow for them. And Rudiger Stead, he's being assessed as well, and if he's out injured here, then that'd be a blow for them as well. You've got players like Agbon Lahore is a doubt as well, so they've got a few injury worries coming into this game. And you know, certainly I think in January, Remy Gard is the new manager, he'll obviously have some players who maybe from France in Ligue 1 that he fancies signing, but I've seen them linked with Charlie Austin recently, and I think that would certainly make sense for them as a move, because you know he didn't get that move away in the summer after, you know, a very impressive first Premier League season last year. And you know, the way things are going at QPR at the moment, you think probably they'd just try and cash in on him in January, because you know, it doesn't look at the moment like QPR are going to be getting promoted this season. They are, you know, in the process of getting a new manager at the moment, but I think Austin would certainly be a good signing for him. I think they sort of need a rounded striker like him. Gusted is more of a sort of battering ram up there. He's good at, you know, winning headers and holding the ball up, but Austin's a much more composed finisher who'll get in behind, run the channels a bit more. And I think with a striker like that, I think if him and Gusted, they could form quite a good partnership. So two different types of player, but I think if Austin did come in, he would then assume the sort of number one striker's role, because he can do a bit of everything. He's good with his head, he's, you know, good movement, good at finishing with his feet as well. So I think if they could get someone like a Charlie Austin, it'd be certainly a very good buy in January. But it's going to be hard to, you know, persuade players to come to a side if Villa are still, you know, just stranded at the bottom. It'd be quite hard to persuade them to come to a team that would be, you know, odds on for relegation.
Yeah, certainly. And this weekend's not going to be easy for them either. We mentioned their poor form, but they're coming against an Everton side at Goodison Park who will certainly go into the match as favourites. They drew 1-0 at West Ham last time out. Not the easiest match. It was an even, pretty open and entertaining game. Lanzini put West Ham into lead with a lovely finish into the top corner, curling it in, but then Lukaku, a similarly nice finish round in the keeper. It was all made by Delofeo's pass, a fantastic pass through the middle, and Lukaku, composed finish. I think that's 7 goals in his last 7 games now, so he's really starting to hit a bit of form, which is ideal for Everton if they want to push up into those European places. Obviously, disappointing season last season, disappointing transfer window in terms of incomings, but they've done so pretty well so far this season. They're 9th in the table. They're level on points with Liverpool. They have won just one of their last 5 Premier League games, though, and that was against Sunderland. 6-2 thrash and a big win, but as we know, that game could have been anything really. There was chances at either end. Everton, it could have easily been 6-0, 6-5, something like that. So that one wasn't, despite the convincing scoreline, it wasn't the most convincing victory. So they're not doing their best form-wise at the moment, but they have had a tough run of fixtures. You have to say that they've had Liverpool, United, Arsenal, and West Ham, in addition to Sunderland, in those last five games, so they can point to the fixtures there. They're only going to get easier, to be honest. So they'll fancy their chances of kicking on now and moving up the table, challenging for those top four, top six places.
Yeah, I think certainly you make that point there, and you do look at their fixtures coming up, and they do get a lot easier between, you know, now and 2016. They've played basically all the big boys in the league now. They've got those out of the way, and like, they are still in the top half, sitting there ninth, and on the whole, it has been a pretty encouraging start to the season. And when you look at, you know, where the table is now, they're only 4 points off fifth place, seven off the top four. They're level with Liverpool, like you mentioned there. And I think with the run of fixtures they've got coming up, it's very important for them to keep pace, you know, with their rivals there, because if Liverpool string together a few wins and start to pull away, I think, because Everton, this is a real chance for them to keep above Liverpool in the table. You look at their fixtures coming up, they've got Villa here, obviously bottom of the table, Bournemouth, who have been, you know, really struggling in recent weeks. Then they've got the League Cup quarter final against Middlesbrough, which is a big game for the club, because it's been a while since they had a cup run, you know, 20 years since they won a trophy. So it's a big game for them, that one. Then after that is Palace, Norwich, Leicester, Newcastle and Stoke, you know, to finish the calendar year. So all of those fixtures, you'd say, winnable for a team like Everton. I don't think they will win all of those, but certainly there's a real chance here for them to put a lot of points on the board going into the new year and put themselves in a really good position.
Yeah, and encouraging signs going forward on the fitness front as well, because Jagielka's still out at the moment, which is a blow, but they've got Baines coming back soon, they've got Cleverley coming back, Oviedo, Bezic, Browning, Galloway, Pienaar. They've got a long injury list at the moment, but slowly they're all coming back to fitness. I think Baines could be a big one. They've been struggling at left back because they've been pretty short in that area of the field at the moment, so to get Baines back fit, if he can get back to the level he was for, as it has been for much of his Everton career, that'd be a huge plus. Defensively, you know, they could do better this season. No clean sheet in the last six Premier League games. Only West Ham on a longer run without a clean sheet of seven Premier League games. So they do need to do better defensively, but that should come with the likes of Baines coming back. Obviously, they've still got Stones there. There's talk of him perhaps being subject of more bids in January from Chelsea, which it's probably going to unsettle Everton. But you saw Stones, he's the type of player, it happened in the summer transfer window as well, he's the type of player who doesn't really take much heed of those. He did put in a transfer request, but on the pitch you wouldn't have noticed anything was up. He was as composed as ever, impressive for England in midweek, very composed on the ball. So they've got a star in him, I think, star in the making in the future. If they can keep hold of him in January as well, get Jagielka back to fitness, get Baines back to fitness, Coleman on the right, another good defensive unit that they've had for a couple of years now, and that defensive record will improve, and that will only help him move up the table.
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing with Baines in particular as well is that, you know, he hasn't played for, it's a good 6 months now since he's played, and if he comes back, you know, in the next couple of weeks, he's got a real point to prove in terms of, you know, the England squad and Roy Hodgson, because, you know, there's a lot of good players that England have at that left-back position. We know Shaw's out for the rest of the season. He might come back in time to be fit for Euro 2016, but I think with Baines, he's going to have quite a lot of fire in his belly, because you look at the players like Bertrand, Gibbs doing well for England. I think Baines really has a point to prove this year, because you'd probably say this might be his last chance, you know, to be like the first choice left back at a tournament for England. So he's got a real point to prove, I think. And it'd be interesting to see how well he starts playing, given, you know, he has been out for 6 months. But anyway, what's your score prediction for this game?
Yeah, I think the addition of Vemigard and how they played against Man City makes this a bit more difficult. But as I say, they were quite lucky to get away with a point there. So I think I'm going to go for an Everton victory here. I don't think they're going to run away with it by any means, but they should have enough about them to come away with a win. I'm going to go for 2-1 Everton.
2-1, yeah, I actually completely agree with that. I think, like you say, Villa won't make it too easy for them. And I think Everton, they haven't been all that convincing in recent weeks. Even, like you mentioned earlier, the 6-2 win over Sunderland, you know, could have gone the other way in that game. But I also think Everton will win 2-1. So both picking Everton to win this one.
Okay, moving on up to St James's Park now, where Newcastle play high-flying Leicester City. Pascal, has got to start with the visitors now. Just 1 point off the top of the table.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, think that if City and Arsenal don't get results this weekend, Leicester could go top. It's an incredible feat for them. You know, we're almost a third of the way through the season, 12 games played, and they're still right up there, 25 points from 12 games. Amazing achievement for them. You know, three wins in a row, four wins in five after that 2-1 win over Watford last time out before the international break. It's some run they're on, and you know, it was another goal for Jamie Vardy in that game. He got the second after Kante put them ahead. You know, you have to say they probably were given a big helping hand by Gomez's performance in the Watford goal. It was a fairly cagey first half. You know, Watford went there, set out quite defensively. They've been good at that this season, Watford, you know, frustrating teams. But then Gomez just gifted them the first goal, you know, with that awful mistake he made, and then gave away the penalty that Vardy stuck away. And 2-0, you never really doubted Leicester there. You know, Deeney, they did concede that, you know, it was a careless penalty that, you know, Deeney stuck away to make it a bit nervous sort of in the final sort of 10 minutes or so. But, you know, once they went 2-0 up, you never really doubted them. And you have to say it's an incredible achievement for them. You know, more goals in the second half as well. They scored 72% of their goals in the second half. So even though they weren't that good in the first half, I think the fans always knew that they would improve after half time. And you have to say that for Leicester to be third at this stage of the season, considering they were, you know, a late season surge away from going down last year, is just an amazing achievement by Ranieri.
It is, and you mentioned Vardy there, obviously 9 consecutive Premier League games he scored in a row there. He just keeps on scoring, and it's quite refreshing to see a player who's obviously so determined to get the record. Often players would just play down these sort of individual feats as just they'd rather win for the team, but Vardy obviously wants this one, and the team obviously wanted to get it, because Mahrez was originally going to take that penalty against Watford, but he turned round at the last second, gave it to Vardy to get his 9th goal in the row. It wasn't the cutest penalty you'll ever see. Vardy smashed it into the top corner through the middle. He wasn't taking any risk, just put his laces through the ball, but he got the goal. He's now just one away from equaling Van Nistelrooy's record. There is a big doubt over him this weekend. He's rated about 50-50 at the moment because of a hip injury, but then again he went off against Watford and it looked like he wasn't going to carry on, but then he soldiered on, came back on the pitch and almost immediately ran for own goal and won the penalty that he then stuck away. So he's a tough cookie. He's going to battle, and if there is a chance of him playing in this game, he would certainly want to do it. He didn't play for England, which would have been a big shame for him, especially with, you know, you would have thought he would have played a fairly big part against France, especially maybe even against Spain if he was fully fit. So that was a bit of a blow for him, but if a few more days, he might be fit enough to start for Leicester. He'll certainly do everything in his power to do it. I think one point to make on Mahrez as well, that I question whether the fact that he's been left out of the team, when he's obviously so skillful, he's been left out of the team a couple of times, maybe to do with his attitude, but the fact that he gave Vardy the penalty, I think, speaks volume about the togetherness that there is at Leicester at the moment. Mahrez, he could have selfishly gone for the penalty himself. He's got a decent scoring record so far this season. Could have got another on the board, but to give that to Vardy was very good of him, I think. And the whole team is obviously so much behind Vardy to get him that record, with Van Nistelrooy's record, that I'll be surprised if he doesn't really get it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think certainly if he is sort of on the fringes and maybe thinks he's fit to play, I think he'll really want to play in this game, because, you know, Newcastle here is much easier than their next game. Say if he does sit out here and then goes for the Premier League record, you know, the following week is when they play, you know, Van Nistelrooy's former club United, ironically, and they've got the stingiest defence in the league, so, and that could be a really tough game for him to, you know, equal the record in. So I think he'll really, really want to play in this one if he can, because I think there's a better chance they'll score against Newcastle than, you know, United the week after, to be honest. But look at the stats. Leicester, they've still only been beaten once this whole season. That was the 5-2 home defeat against Arsenal. And, you know, that's the joint fewest defeats with Spurs, who haven't lost since the opening day. So it's really, really impressive that they've only, you know, in 12 games, only lost one of those games. And that was against, you know, one of the two sides above them. But you have to say, when you look at their fixtures to sort of end the sort of half season, you know, coming up to the end of the calendar year, after that, you know, Newcastle here, it's a winnable game for them. But then, like I said, it's United the week after, then Swansea, Chelsea, Everton, Liverpool and Man City to finish the calendar year. And you have to say, it's a really, really difficult run of fixtures to end the year. And I don't think anyone's really considering them a serious top four contenders yet. But if they could, you know, string together, say, maybe 3 wins in those last 6 games, maybe a draw and then 2 defeats in the others, that if they can get that sort of points haul, they'll still be in and around the top four by 2016. And maybe, if you know, if they're in that sort of position, the owners might think, right, okay, if we spend a bit more money here, improve the squad in January, we might have a real chance here of somehow, you know, crashing the, you know, top 6 or maybe even the top 4. I think it's still a long shot, that, but if they are there come 2016, they could spend a lot of money in January.
Yeah, you can't really write them off at the moment, can they? They keep proving people wrong. Everyone thinks they're going to drop off, but they keep on winning, and they'll fancy their chance of winning again this weekend. Newcastle, still, they're now out of the bottom three, but they're still in and around the relegation zone. Moved out of the bottom three with a 1-0 win at Bournemouth, but they really rode their luck in that match. Quite how they won that game, I'm not sure even Steve McClaren was sure. They scored with their only shot on target, Eze Perez, and that was a bit of a goalkeeping error from Federici. Probably should have kept that one out, but that was really their only attack of the game. Aside from that, it was all Bournemouth. The stats are making incredible readings. Bournemouth had 67% possession, 20 shots to Newcastle's 2, 16 corners to Newcastle's 0. It was completely one-way traffic. Bournemouth just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. Rob Elliott had probably his the best game of his career in goal, but then Bournemouth, they only managed 5 shots on target from their 20 shots. It was mainly some poor finishing from Bournemouth, really. They should have done better if they maybe had Callum Wilson on the field. They would have got a few goals, but Newcastle were really hanging on for that. Quite fortunate to get it back at the end of the day. It is another clean sheet. That's back-to-back clean sheets. They haven't had 3 in a row for a year now, so that's something to aim for against Leicester. Obviously not going to be easy against the Leicester side who are scoring so freely so far this season, but something to aim for. 3 in total this season after their goalless draw against United earlier this season, which again they had to hang on for. So they've got a bit of resilience, but there's no doubt about it. They rode their luck against Bournemouth.
Yeah, you mentioned the performance of Rob Elliott there. The thing is, he's a doubt for this weekend, and so is the other goalkeeper, Carl Darlow, because we already know that Tim Krul, he's out for, you know, the rest of the season with that serious knee injury. So they're going to surely try to get one of these two players fit, but if it doesn't go to plan in the next couple of days, then they might have to call on, you know, an academy keeper to come up, and, you know, if he comes into the team, he's going to be facing the best striker, well, the hottest striker in the league at the moment, in Vardy, if he plays. So could be a very interesting goalkeeping dilemma for Newcastle coming into this one. And certainly we're talking about the goalkeeping there, but at the other end of the field, they've only scored one goal in the last 3 Premier League games. That was Perez's winner, like you said, which was quite fortunate anyway, at Dean Court last week. So they need to improve going forward. You know, Wijnaldum's looked good here and there, but in terms of the strikers, you know, Mitrovic, the same. He's, you know, both players have looked like fairly decent signings, but they haven't been consistent enough to put Newcastle in sort of a mid-table position. So they both need to find some form, but we talked about Leicester's fixtures getting tough. So do Newcastle's. You know, facing Leicester here is a really difficult game for them. And then you look at their fixtures after this. They go to Crystal Palace, host Liverpool, and then go to Spurs. So the next 4 games, Leicester, Palace, Liverpool, Spurs, you know, all top half sides have been decent of late. So it's a tough run of fixtures for Newcastle. They got out of the bottom 3 before the international break, but it looks like they could soon, you know, drop back in.
And the league table is quite clear which way this match should go. Which way do you see it going?
Yeah, I'm going to back Leicester here. I think, you know, it's 2-week international break. You might say that the form might not matter as much, but I just, you know, Leicester, they've been doing fantastically. Even if, you know, Vardy doesn't play, there's other players who you'd say probably could take up the slack, like Mahrez. And I think Leicester will win this one 2-0.
Yeah, I agree with the Leicester victory. You mentioned Newcastle's form has improved a little of late. They've only lost 1 of the last 4, but as we say, quite how they didn't lose against Bournemouth, I'm not so sure. So I can see Leicester, the momentum some of their key players have got at the moment, I can see them overwhelming Newcastle here a bit as well. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 Leicester victory. So we're both going for Leicester away victories.
At St Mary's, it's 2 sides coming off the back of 1-0 wins as Southampton entertained Stoke. Barnes, let's start with the visitors this time before the international break, a 1-0 win over Chelsea.
Yeah, obviously a very good win. We know about Chelsea's trouble so far this season, but any victory over them, as Mark Hughes said after the game, they're still a very good side. They've still got very good players, so any victory over them is going to be a good one. Obviously, it's already Stoke's second victory over them this season after beating them on penalties in the League Cup, so they seem to have their number at the moment, but they did have to ride their luck at times in that match. Chelsea, quite how they didn't score, I'm not sure. Nothing seems to be going for them at the moment. They were much improved from their previous performance. This is the one performance they can really look at and say they didn't deserve to lose. They were unlucky in that game, but Stoke took full advantage of that. They're always dangerous on the break with some of the players they got. Arnautovic is in a bit of form right now, turning out to be a really important player for them, and he got the winning goal. That was a really acrobatic volley, a good finish from them. So, you know, they took their chances when it arose. Second best on the day, I think Mark Hughes readily admitted that after the game, so they were quite fortunate to come away with all 3 points, but 3 points nonetheless. It gives them their best ever Premier League start now after 12 games. They are only 12th in the table, only got 16 points, but it is their best ever start, and they fancy their chances. They've always traditionally been sort of team that might climb the table towards the end of the season steadily. For a few years they were obviously batting against relegation when they first came into the league, but under Mark Hughes last season it was certainly a case of building a team that's steadily climbed the table, and if they can do that again this season, then another top half finish is certainly within their grasp. They started well enough, you know, down in 12th, it's pretty mediocre at the moment, but they'll fancy their chances of, they're still certainly still in contention for a top half finish, and they'll fancy their chances of building as the season progresses.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's only 1 defeat in 7 Premier League games now for them. That was that really disappointing 2-0 defeat at home to Watford. So that was a bit of a blip. But on the whole, their form has been, you know, decent in recent weeks. And there's 4 clean sheets in 5 as well. So they've sort of, you know, regathered that sort of defensive stability that they're sort of known for, Stoke. And you'd probably say the main reason for that is Jack Butland. He's been fantastic in goal for them this season. We've sang his praises quite a few times, but he again impressed, you know, as like you mentioned there, that, you know, Stoke were a bit fortunate in the Chelsea game. But he did make some key saves there. He came on for England in midweek against France, replaced Joe Hart at half-time. Hart had a couple of dodgy moments in the first half, a couple of, you know, loose kicks, and then Butland came on, looked very assured, made a couple of great saves, one in particular from Martial, where he stuck out his hand to the right and made a very smart near post stop. So he's looking really good there, and you just wonder if he keeps going the way he is. Hart, you know, hasn't been as good. He made that, you know, Hart made that horrendous error that gifted Norwich their goal a few weeks back. And, you know, if Hart sort of starts plateauing a bit, and if Butland just keeps getting better, you know, you have to say he'll really come into contention, I think, for the number one spot in France at Euro 2016 next year. I still expect probably that Hart will be the number one in Euro 2016, but as I've mentioned, I think a couple of weeks back, I think that this could maybe be Hart's last tournament as number one. Maybe he might not even be number one for this tournament, because I think Butland is really showing incredible progress. He's becoming one of the, you know, best keepers in the league this season, and if he keeps going the way he is, it would be really difficult for Hodgson not to make him number one in France next year, I think.
Yeah, I've been very, very impressed with him as well. He's such a good shot stopper, isn't he? He seems to always make himself big and make some crucial saves for Stoke, and they probably wouldn't be as high as 12th if he hadn't been in such fine form so far this season. Their main problems really are coming at the other end of the field, which is quite surprising when you consider they've got the likes of, you know, Shaqiri, Arnautovic, Bojan, Diouf has had his moments in the Premier League. They've got some dangerous players that can hurt teams, but they've only scored 10 league goals so far this season in 12 games, which is joint fewest along with West Brom and Aston Villa. So that's certainly an area that they need to improve. And as I mentioned, it is their best ever Premier League start, but they've got a tough end to the year. Six of their last seven fixtures in 2015 are against teams currently in the top half of the table, and they haven't beaten any team in the top half of the table so far this season. You know, they've lost to Liverpool and Arsenal, they've drawn with Tottenham and Leicester, and that Tottenham game they needed two late goals to come back from 2-0 behind as well. So they haven't got the best record against teams above them in the table at the moment, but and they've got a tough run of fixtures in that sense coming up in the top half. But if they can perhaps get some victories in those games, then it'll certainly build the belief in the squad.
Absolutely, yeah, but they come up, like you say, one of those top half sides here, Southampton, 6-7 at the moment. They've won three in a row in all competitions, unbeaten in eight as well, so they're in really good form, Southampton. Before the international break, they were 1-0 winners at Sunderland, thanks to Tadic's penalty. And, you know, it was one of those games where, you know, Sunderland, they defended quite well in that one, but Southampton, they don't often blow teams away on the road. You know, I think, you know, they did beat Sunderland 8-0 last season, but that was at home, and, you know, no one expected that kind of scoreline. And in the game, you know, Sunderland, like I said, they did defend okay, but then it was one sort of moment of madness from Villa, wasn't it? He dove in on Ryan Bertrand, really, really silly to give away a penalty like that. Tadic stuck it away, and three more points for Southampton. That's back-to-back wins and clean sheets as well. I mean, if I was a Southampton fan, I wouldn't get too excited about that. It was only Bournemouth and Sunderland they were facing, you know, not exactly, you know, there's two of the bottom three sides and two sides not in very good form at all. But, you know, still two wins, two clean sheets. You can't complain with that. You know, like I mentioned earlier, unbeaten in eight as well, and they last enjoyed an unbeaten run like this. You know, it's 2 years now since they had an unbeaten run like that in November 2013. So they are really, really playing well. Defensively, they look solid. They might be without Van Dijk for this one, which would be a blow, because he's come in and looked very, very solid in central defence for them. So if he's out, that'd be a blow. But you still say, you know, given their recent form, that they will go into this match as favourites.
Yeah, and in that eight-game unbeaten, they actually won six of them in all competitions, which is a good record. The concern, a bit like Stoke, to be honest, is that none of those victories have actually come against top-half teams. They've drawn against Liverpool and Leicester in that run, are the only top-half teams they've played. Obviously, they fancy a chance against Stoke, who are in the bottom half, going into this game. And, you know, Ronald Koeman, he'll be fairly content. They obviously deserve to win against Sunderland. They were the better team on the day and finally found the breakthrough. It's maybe a bit tougher than some might expect it, but they finally got the win. Now 7th with 20 points from 12 games, 1 point off 5th, 4 points off the top 4, so very much still in the race for a European place, and they will fancy their chance of keeping that challenge up throughout the season. They've won 3 of the last 4 at home, which is where the bulk of their points are coming, and they're scoring goals at home as well. They've got 9 in those last 4 games, 3 goals in one of them and 2 goals in the last 3 home games. Pele, as we know, is fantastic at home. We've mentioned it a few times. He always seems to score at St Mary's. Has his struggles away from home, but at St Mary's, you always back him to score. He has been linked with a move away from the club. He's admitted that he misses Italy, and Juventus are apparently looking at him, perhaps interested in, but he does seem to be happy at Southampton. I'd be very surprised if anything unsettles him in January, and if he was to leave in January. So I don't think Southampton have to worry about that much at the moment, and I don't think they've got too many worries on the horizon, because they're in decent form, and they'll fancy the chance of improving that this weekend.
Yeah, I just think, though, with, you know, Pella, you know, if he does say he misses Italy, you know, Juve, obviously a huge club there in Serie A, if they did come in with a big offer, you know, he's probably Italy's number one striker now for the national team as well, so there's a lot of, you know, more spotlight on him, you know, back in Italy than there was when he, say, first moved to Southampton. I think it'd be really difficult, say, if you know, Juve came with a big offer, Southampton maybe thought about accepting it. I think it'd be really difficult for him to turn that down, because I think he'd be interested in it. But anyway, what's your score prediction for this game?
Yeah, I can't see many goals in this one. I think both teams can be pretty tight at the back, so I can see it being edged by one goal either way, and I think I'm going to go for Southampton 1-0.
1-0. Yeah, this is quite a tough one to call. I think Stoke have looked solid, but like you say, their record against top-half teams isn't that great, and I think Southampton will prove too strong. I'm going to go for a 2-0 home win for them. So both picking Southampton to win this one.
Okay, from two sides in good form to two sides in need of a victory as Swansea host Bournemouth at the Liberty Stadium. Pascal, we'll start with the home side. Their poor form continued with a 1-0 defeat to Norwich last time out.
Yeah, it's just one win in their last eight Premier League games for Swansea now, sitting 14th in the table. That one win was against, you know, bottom club Aston Villa, so not exactly that much to get excited about, you know, and they needed a late goal in that one to get a winner. So it has been really, really poor from Swansea. We talked about it in depth, you know, for a good couple of months now, that since that, you know, their good form in August, it really has dipped. Go to Norwich, who I think were without a win in six themselves, so I think it was a real chance for Swansea to, you know, get another win, but they couldn't do it, not being able to score against Norwich, you know, and then the goal they did concede as well was from a set piece. And, you know, Johnny Howson, he's hardly the biggest guy on the pitch, he's one of the smallest, in fact, so to let him have a header there and, you know, stick it away was disappointing. They did create some chances, you know, Sigurdsson hit the bar with that cheeky chip he had, but apart from that, really not that much to get excited about for Swansea fans. Gomis again, he gets himself into some decent positions and there's fairly good service, but at the moment he's in such bad form in terms of his finishing in front of goal. You know, he was doing so well in the first month of the season, finished last season quite strongly as well, and we said that, you know, at one point they might not necessarily need to spend big with that Wilfried Bonny money to buy another striker, but it's a player they desperately need, I think, at the moment, because Gomis, he just seemed to have a bit of a... It was a short-term, you know, good run of form, you know, last season, start of this season, but he's looked really, you know, below par the last sort of month or two, and I think they really do need a replacement in January. And you have to say that there's not really many excuses that they can have for this poor form. They've been you know, they had their best ever Premier League total last season. They've got a fully fit squad, no injuries at all. So there's no excuses they can have there. And you have to say that they've really hit poor form, and it needs to turn around soon.
Yeah, and they haven't had a particularly tough run of fixtures with a lot of big teams in a row either, so it is strange why they're in such poor form, and the questions have started to arise about Gary Monk's future, which, you know, I still think is a bit premature. He did such a good job for them in his first season last term, and there was talk of him being the next big thing, the next bright manager. Even in August when they were doing so well, he was being lauded by the media, and now there's exit rumours gathering a bit of pace. There's talk that he's fallen out with the Hugh Jenkins, the chairman at Swansea, over having perhaps a more experienced manager, coach to deal with him, which Gary...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Doesn't want to talk about that, but by all accounts, they do. The chairman and the manager do still have a fairly decent bond. Obviously, Monk's been, he's been with Swansea for years and years now, so he knows the club. He's a hero at the club, played for them for years, so he won't want to leave. I don't think Swansea will want him to leave. I don't think the fans will want him to leave if they can avoid it, but it is pretty poor form. I think he's earned the right to have a lot more time, and he could do with a lot more help from the players. I think you mentioned Gomis there. He's been in poor form. He started the season well, but he's one of only three players to have actually scored in the Premier League for Swansea this season. Ayew, he's done well since coming in, and Sigurdsson, those are the only other two to have actually scored. So they need the likes of Key, Jonjo Shelvey, Adair, Jefferson Montero. They need them to start weighing in with goals. Montero in particular had a good start to the season with his performances, but they need more goals throughout the team, because if you've only got three players scoring for you in the Premier League, you're going to lose or draw more games than you actually win. So Monk needs some help from his players. There was questions, you know, whether Sigurdsson, he reportedly criticised Monk, said he doesn't really communicate with the players. Ashley Williams seemed a bit annoyed that Gary Monk stopped him playing the full friendly for Wales against Netherlands, I think it was, in the international break. So perhaps a few cracks starting to emerge between the manager and player, but I think the players do need to do more for Monk.
Absolutely. I think Sigurdsson, he did kind of backtrack on those comments a bit. He said, I think it was kind of a bit lost in translation what he said there, but I think certainly, you know, the players, they can't have given up on Monk yet. But like you say, they do need to contribute a lot more. And he talks about the goal struggles. There are only three players, netting in the league this season, but it's no clean sheet in six either. So defensively they haven't looked as sound. You know, Ashley Williams was really marshalling that defence when they were at their best form, but they kind of lost their way a bit at the back, and you know, they haven't scored in three of the last four games, all of those being defeats as well. So both defence and attack, they're really struggling. And yeah, like you said, I think someone like Jonjo Shelvey, you know, he can score goals from midfield. He's got a good shot on him. He likes breaking into the box, but he hasn't done much. Ed Ayer, like you said, he was sort of brought in as a decent backup striker. And I think he's played 10 or 11 times this season. He has come on in a lot of games, still yet to score, which for an out-and-out striker just simply isn't good enough. And their home form has to improve as well. They've not won in their last four at home, and they're not scored in three of those games either. So when you're not scoring at home, you're not winning at home, there's something clearly wrong. And with them 14th in the table, they're not exactly that far away from the drop zone now, so they need to, you know, go on a decent run to pull away, because they looked so good at the start of the season, you know, being tipped maybe to break into the top six there after what, like we said, was a great year last year. But it has all gone wrong, and the things need to turn around soon. And like you said, I think Monk will be given time, and given how players like Gomez have struggled, they should probably be looking to sign some players in January, I would have thought, because they still haven't really, you know, spent a chunk of that money they got for Wilfred Bonny last January. So it'd be interesting to see what they do next in the new year.
Yeah, and you mentioned Swansea would have gone into that Norwich game hoping for a win, because Norwich are in poor form, and Bournemouth, they come into this match in even worse form, so Swansea will be pretty confident of maybe breaking their own poor form in this match. Bournemouth, they've now lost five in a row in all competitions, winless in their last seven. It's dropped into the relegation zone before the international break with a 1-0 loss to Newcastle in a bottom of the table clash. That was two of the bottom four, sorry, going head to head. I mean, quite how they didn't win that game, I'm not really sure. Eddie Howe was scratching his head. He said how cruel the Premier League was after the match, because they absolutely dominated from start to finish. Newcastle only had one shot on target. That was Eyosi Perez, and that should have been saved by Federici. Crept under his hand, trickled over the line. So agonising for them. And that was one of only two shots Newcastle had all game. Bournemouth dominated possession. They had 20 shots to Newcastle's two. 16 corners. Newcastle didn't even have one. It was just one-way traffic throughout, but Bournemouth just couldn't stick the ball in the back of the net. They had a lot of ones which went very close. Rob Elliott made a few crucial saves. It's just chance after chance they were creating. They just couldn't score. I mean, they need to do that. Obviously, they're missing Callum Wilson through injury. He's their main goal scorer. But they need other players, just like Swansea do. They need other players to step up and start scoring those goals. That didn't happen against Newcastle. They'll take a lot of positives from the actual performance, because they were the better team quite comfortably. And they've been probably the better team in a few matches when they haven't got what they deserve from games so far this season. But it's a results business in the Premier League. If you don't get those points on the board, you're not going to stay in the division. They need to start turning those good performances into results.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, look at their sort of recent Premier League form, four defeats in a row, scoring only two as well. And you just wonder if they've got enough quality to score goals in the Premier League. Like you say, because they did create a lot of chances against Newcastle. And I mentioned that, you know, Swansea can't really have any excuses injury wise but it's the opposite for Bournemouth. You know, they have been desperately unlucky. You know, it's their first ever season in the top flight of English football, and for them to lose the players like they have, you know, Callum Wilson especially is the big one, Gradle as well, who's starting to find his feet. So it's really, really unlucky for Bournemouth, you have to say. And one thing they can't do is, you know, Matt Ritchie, he's been there probably their best player. He was their best player last year, probably. I thought he was the best player in the Championship, didn't actually win the award, but he was standout player for them last year. He's been, you know, Manchester United, I think that was a bit of a stretch linking him there, but I've seen clubs like West Brom and Stoke maybe might go for him in January. But I don't, Bournemouth just can't sell him in January. You know, they're best players, they've got to stick by him, because the thing is, if they don't turn the season around, and if they do end up going down, they're going to have to sell their star players in the summer. That there's no way they're going to be able to keep them. They're going to sort of do what Burnley had to do last year, you know, lose, because Burnley lost the likes of Ings and Trippier. Bournemouth will probably have to do the same if they go down, and the likes of Ritchie and Wilson, you know, they could follow this sort of similar path if the Cherries don't stay up. So it's a big time coming up for the club. You know, they have been struggling of late, and if they're still going to be in the bottom three sort of, you know, by the time the transfer window opens, there's talk that there's a bit of new American investment at the club, and Jeff Mostyn, he said that they're not going to go on a spending spree, but you certainly feel, given the key injuries that they have suffered, that they might need to bring in some new faces just to try and stay in the league this season, because if not, you could see them maybe just falling away and, you know, being out of the race, you know, by, say, April sort of time.
So it is two teams in desperate need of a victory. Do you see either getting one?
Yeah, I'm going to side with Swansea. I think Bournemouth, they've looked really, really... I know they created a lot of chances against Newcastle, but, you know, they just, at the moment, they don't really look like a Premier League side at the moment. I don't think Bournemouth. I think Swansea, you'd expect them to sort of start to find their feet sooner rather than later. And I don't think it'll be exactly a high-scoring game, but I think Swansea might just edge it 2-0.
Yeah, I'm going to back Swansea as well, I think. Bournemouth, they have been struggling for goals of late. They haven't scored in the last three in all competitions. And Swansea, even though they're in poor form, the one game they have won recently is against Aston Villa. So against the struggling teams, they can get something out of the game. I'm going to agree with the Swansea victory, but I can see Bournemouth maybe getting a goal. I'm going to go for 2-1 to Swansea. So both going for home victories here.
The last of the 3 p.m. kickoffs is at the Hawthorns, where West Brom host Arsenal. Barnsley start with the visitors still level on points with City at the top of the table after a 1-1 draw with Spurs in the North London derby.
Yeah, it turned out to be a bit of a missed chance in the end, didn't it, for Arsenal? Obviously, Man City could only get a draw against Aston Villa when a lot of people would have been expecting them to win that. So there was a chance for Arsenal to go clear at the top of the table. But in truth, I think they'll be pretty content with the 1-1 draw in that match. Tottenham were probably the better side for long spells in that. Arsenal, they might be able to argue that they should have won it with those chances. Giroud had a couple of headed chances, which he really should have scored, to be honest with you, quite close up. And the form he's in with those one-touch finishes I've talked about in the box before, that you'd have backed him to score a couple, at least one of those. So Arsenal can point to factors why perhaps they should have won it. But in the end, a draw was probably the fairest result. And you'd have to say Tottenham were probably the better team. I think there was a bit of confusion why Wenger was bringing Gibbs on when they're chasing the goal, but he turns up and gets the equaliser after Harry Kane had earlier scored the opener for Tottenham. And that Harry Kane goal was a bit worrying defensively for Arsenal, because they could have defended it better. Koscielny dropped back, played him onside. Mertesacker didn't really come across quickly enough. Could have defended that one a lot better. But to come back into that match, Gibbs getting the equaliser, as I mentioned, then create more chances with Giroud. They finished the match quite well. 1-1, a fair result in the end, but it is a missed chance. They're still level at the top of the table. Could, in fact, drop as low as fourth this weekend if results were to go against them. But as things stand, they'll be happy with their position, joint top of the table.
Yeah, they definitely will be, yeah. And I think the interesting thing with sort of you look at their run of fixtures they've got coming up after this, you know, their next four league games, they've got West Brom in this one, obviously, and then Norwich, Sunderland and Aston Villa. You know, all four of those sides they would really expect to beat. And the thing is, in between those two games is the huge couple of Champions League group games they've got, because, you know, they've only got 3 points after four games of the group. You know, they need to win both of those, you know, they're must-win games. And I do wonder if, you know, their key forward, you know, Alexis Sanchez, there's talk that he will be rested this weekend, and that Wenger might even give him a mid-season break, because he's been looking a little jaded. You know, he did so well in the summer, you know, helping Chile win the Copa America, their first ever international trophy. But you just wonder if that summer, all the effort he put in over the summer is catching up with him. And, you know, he played 180 minutes, played in both games for Chile over the recent international break as well. So he might return home from that tired. You know, last time they had an international break, we talked about the same kind of thing, that he might get a rest, but he didn't. You know, he's one of those players who will just want to play whatever the condition. But maybe Wenger might just think about maybe resting him for this one. If not for him being jaded, more for the fact that the Champions League tie on Tuesday against Zagreb is arguably bigger than this one against West Brom, because you'd probably back Arsenal to win this. And then, you know, like I said, those next four Premier League games, you'd expect 12 points out of 12, to be honest. And then after that, they've got the big showdown with Man City on December the 21st, which, you know, by all accounts, probably will still be a top-of-the-table clash, you know, next month.
Yeah, and those four Premier League games you mentioned, three of them have come away from home, which some people might view as a negative considering how good Arsenal can be at home, but their away form in the Premier League is actually very impressive. They've got 31 from 36 possible away points in their last 12 Premier League games. Best away record in the league this season, 5 wins and only that one defeat against Chelsea when they ended the game with 9 men, so they can point to the 2 sendings-offs there. I mean, their away record in other competitions isn't great. They got comfortably beaten by Munich, by Bayern Munich, of course, in the Champions League recently. 3-0 defeat to Sheffield Wednesday in the League Cup, and lost to Dynamo Zagreb as well. So in other competitions, they haven't been too good on the road, but in the Premier League, they're very impressive away from home, and they'll be confident of keeping that up. They've got a good run, as you mentioned. West Brom, Norwich and Aston Villa are the three of those four games that are away from home, and they've got Olympiacos in the midst of that, which will be an absolute crucial Champions League match, last game of the group, and is Olympiacos who they're expected to be battling out for. It could be a winner-takes-all tie, that one, so that'll be a huge one. So four big away ties coming up, and four that they'll be confident of winning as well.
Absolutely, yeah. West Brom, who host them here, they come into this game not exactly in the best form. They've had back-to-back defeats, one to Leicester, and then last time out before the international break, 2-0 defeat at Old Trafford against Man United. They weren't too bad in that game, to be honest, but, you know, once, you know, United did struggle to break them down in the first half, but once Lingard, you know, curled in that shot, excellent finish from him, you know, that, you know, broke West Brom's resolve. And from there, you know, they didn't create too much. There was just the one chance, the one glaring opportunity they had with Berahino, who, you know, recently in the last week has been linked with Chelsea, interestingly. He missed an absolute sit. It was a great cross in from the right, and it was a completely free header. Maybe he thought the defender in front of him might have got it, and he seemed a little bit surprised, but for him to... He just didn't sort of direct his head, you know, towards the goal. The ball just sort of hit him on the head and then just cannoned, you know, wide of the goal. It was a real, really, really good chance, which would have levelled the scores at the time. And then United get the late penalty. Gareth McCauley sent off for the challenge, and then Mata stuck it away, which obviously made it look more comfortable for United than perhaps it was. But, you know, they had that one chance from Berahino, but they didn't actually have a shot on target the whole game at Old Trafford, so they didn't create too many chances. Berahino should have got that on target at the very least and should have scored, to be honest. But, like I said, back-to-back defeats and leaves them 13th.
Yeah, that Berahino chance, it looked to me like he thought he was going to get clattered and lacked a bit of bravery and just sort of pulled out the header a little bit. It just obviously didn't hit them on the forehead as the header's meant to be. Hit them on the top of the head and skewed over the bar. But you do have to take those chances. West Brom set up in that exact way, so they, if they get the chance, one chance on the break, they might be able to nick it, perhaps nick a point, perhaps nick all three if they can keep a clean sheet at the other end. But that didn't happen, and it's, the problems are in the final third at the moment. They've had the fewest shots of anyone this season, joint fewest goals with only 10 all season, so that's a real concern for Tony Pulis. If there is a positive, it's that the likes of Rondon, Lambert and Berahino have all scored in within their last four games. Obviously, Lambert's came from the penalty spot, but all three of the strikers have scored, but they're not doing enough, really, in the final third. Lambert hasn't hit the ground running. He hasn't really made an impact at all at West Brom. Rondon, he's shown a few flashes of why West Brom's paid so much money for him in recent weeks, but still not really justifying the amount they spent on them. But and Berahino, as you mentioned, hasn't hit the heights of last season yet, and that missed chance against Man United was the perfect example of that. But still, the 13th in the table, I think we're sort of at the stage of the season now where the table's starting to take a bit more recognisable shape. You can start looking into it a bit more, and you'd expect them, we were expecting them before the season to be a sort of mid-table team, and it looks like how it's turning out to be. They're 6 points clear of the drop zone. I'd be surprised if they get dragged into a real relegation battle this season, but at the same time, they need to improve their home form, especially. Only Villa have got a worse home record. You have to say that they've had a few tough matches recently. Obviously, United last week, Arsenal this week, and then West Ham, Tottenham, Liverpool. So tough fixtures coming up, which mean, you know, they might be dragged towards the relegation zone in the next few weeks. But I'd be surprised, come towards the end of the season, if they're not in and around 13th place or perhaps a little higher as they are now.
Yeah, so you've got sort of West Brom with, you know, not a great home record, Arsenal the best away record, and the other stats, you know, they all point to an Arsenal win here. West Brom haven't beaten Arsenal in their last 9 Premier League meetings, and Arsenal scored in all 18 Premier League games against West Brom, which is the longest scoring record like that against one opposition in Premier League history. So everything points to an Arsenal win here. Do you see it going that way?
I do, yeah. I mean, Arsenal, they weren't at their best against Tottenham, but it's a North London derby. You can't really look too much into that. So I'm going to go for a fairly comfortable Arsenal win. I'm going to go for 2-0.
2-0, yeah. I'm gonna side with you with an Arsenal win there. But West Brom, when they've played the big boys at home this season, they've conceded a few goals. You know, they've conceded 3 to City, 3 to Chelsea. Everton scored 3 there. Leicester scored 3 there. And I think Arsenal will do the same. I'm going to go for 3-0 Arsenal win. So we're both picking Arsenal to win this one pretty comfortably.
Okay, moving on to the standout tie of the weekend. It's Manchester City versus Liverpool in Saturday's evening kickoff. Pascal, will start with the home side. They're still top ahead of Arsenal on goal difference, but only managed a 0-0 draw against Villa last time out.
Yeah, that was a disappointing result for them. I know, you know, the mood at Villa was a bit lifted because of the new manager, Remy Gard, being there. But, you know, City were still the better team, and that created far more chances. And it was a missed opportunity for them. They're quite fortunate that Arsenal then, you know, went on to draw with Spurs later on that Sunday to, you know, so they did stay top instead of dropping behind the Gunners. But still, you know, there was some real missed chances there. I mean, the De Bruyne one was the worst of all. It was slightly behind him, but, you know, he tried to be inventive and use that sort of Cruyff flick in the box when he probably should have just done something more simpler and just, you know, stuck it in. But he missed that chance. You know, Delph came off the bench. There was all the crowd started hissing, and then, you know, there was all the plastic snakes with his face on them as well. So it wasn't a very nice atmosphere when he came on, but he was so close to scoring the winner for City at that one with his right foot that just went wide. And then another one that Guzan kept out. Fernando hit the bar. You know, they did have chances in that game. On another day, they probably would have won that just, you know, fairly comfortably 2-0. You know, sort of a league leader's display against one of the bottom sides. Just a sort of a classic 2-0 win. But it wasn't to happen in the end. And disappointing. They lost Bonny to injury quite early on in that game as well. So he's now doubt for this one. And so, you know, points, it's still a point. It's all right. But they should have certainly won the game. It was against, you know, it was top versus bottom. They would expect to win it, and they didn't. So very disappointing, and it's very tight at the top now. You know, them and Arsenal, 26 points. Leicester, you know, they're doing fantastically, 25. United, 24. So there's only 2 points separating the top four, and then you've got Spurs and West Ham 3 points further back on 21. So it's all very tight up there, and certainly any save City, you know, if they did go on a sort of a bit of a poor run, they could certainly, you know, they could drop out of the top four in no time. So it's important for them to, you know, get back to winning ways.
Yeah, it was certainly two drop points against Villa, wasn't it? But at the same time, they are now unbeaten in 9 in all competitions. They at least kept the unbeaten run going. They never really looked in danger of losing that match. They've won 7 of those 9 as well in all competitions since the 4-1 defeat to Spurs, which was a bit of a shock, but came in a sort of time when City weren't doing very well. And looking forward, the signs are encouraging for them. They've been without a few key players at various stages of the season. They've got a few key players very close to, they could return this weekend. If not this weekend, then they're very close to returning. The likes of Aguero, the likes of David Silva, arguably their two best players, have been out for a while now, and they could be back this weekend or in the very near future. Vincent Kompany as well, recent injury troubles with him, all the arguments with Manuel Pellegrini and Mark Wilmots, the Belgian manager, over his fitness. So that's those three key players, and probably the main spine of the team there, could be coming back soon. So they'll be confident of picking up. If Aguero's not fit for this weekend, if Bonny's not fit for this weekend, that could leave them a bit short up front. Iheanacho has looked bright when he's come on at times, but I wouldn't be surprised if Pellegrini went for more of a false nine, no recognised striker, perhaps Sterling leading the line with Navas and De Bruyne either side or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised if he held a Iheanacho back, because it is a big game for such a young player. But if he does go for Iheanacho, should Aguero and Bonny not be fit, then I think the youngster's shown enough signs that he is ready, and he would be able to give Liverpool a few problems. So even though City would be missing their two main strikers, there are other options for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'd agree with you. I think it's more likely that he'd play Sterling, you know, through the middle, and then, you know, just try and dominate the ball and, you know, not let Liverpool have too much on the counter attack. But, you know, they did fail to score against Villa, very disappointing. But even with that blank, they're still top scorers in the league. 26 league goals they've got in 12 games this season. So still been firing in the goals. And I think you mentioned Silva there. He's been, you know, it's been quite a while since we saw Silva play. When he first got injured, it didn't seem quite as serious as it has been. It seems like a long time now since we saw David Silva play, and he's obviously one of the best players in the league. You know, we all like watching him when he's at his best, and it'll be really good to see him back. And like you say, if Silva and Aguero can come back, it would just be, I mean, City are already top and they haven't had those players for the bulk of the season, so that's quite a bit of a warning sign for the rest of the league. I think if them two come back fully fit, and if they can stay fit for the rest of the season, you'd certainly say City definitely the favourites to go on and win the league. And they do have the best home record as well, so it's going to be really tough for Liverpool to get anything out of this game. They've got 15 points out of a possible 18 at the Etihad. The only loss they had was the defeat to West Ham, who, you know, at the time were just beating anyone and everyone away from home. So City looking fairly strong, and I think they will just start this game just as favourites.
Yeah, and they're coming up against the Liverpool team, who are languishing down in 10th place despite, you know, Klopp. He came in bit of an inauspicious start with 3 draws, but then 3 victories, but then he fell to his first defeat in charge of the club at home to Crystal Palace last time out. We've spoken in depth about how good Crystal Palace are away from home, and, you know, it wasn't a huge surprise, certainly not as big a surprise as it might have been in other years. Palace have been a bogey team for Liverpool in recent seasons, particularly at Anfield, always seem to get some sort of result there, and it was no different. This one was very avoidable for Liverpool, though, you'd have to say. Both goals, pretty poor defending. Bolasie's, when he lashed a loose ball into the top of the net, Liverpool had a couple of chances to clear that before it fell to Bolasie. Scott Dan's one, Mignolet, he pushed it right back out into a danger zone. It wasn't a howler from him, but he could have done better. He could have pushed it away from danger, probably should have pushed it away from danger, and there's a little bit of luck about how it bounced back to Dan, and then he obviously stuck it home for the winner. Coutinho again, decent performance for him, good goal. He's starting to find top form now. He had a bit of a slow start under Klopp, but he's finding a bit of form now, which is important for Liverpool. And I think Benteke as well, he's linking up with him quite well. He's looking like he's in good form as under Klopp. He looks very dangerous player. With Sterling could be back, Sturridge could be back for this one, which would be a big boost for Liverpool. I think he's fit and ready to play apparently, but it depends, you know, whether they want to chuck him in right at the deep end straight away. So it'll be interesting to see who they start up for this one, but they need to bounce back from that Palace defeat. It was a disappointing defeat, as we say, perhaps not the biggest shot, but particularly disappointing after away victories against Chelsea and Rubin Kazan. And that Rubin Kazan result you could probably point to as one of the reasons they lost to Chelsea, because they put a lot of effort into that one. They were the better team for a long time. They had to be patient. They had to grind down the opposition. There was only really one team in it, but they had to work quite hard for the victory in the end. So with that one coming on the Thursday and then having to travel all the way back, a long journey to face Crystal Palace on the Sunday, that's going to take out the team. So a lot of factors into that Palace defeat, but still a disappointing defeat, whichever way you slice it, really.
Yeah, and it leaves them, you know, 7 points off the top four, and they've got a minus goal difference as well, minus one, only team in the top 10 with a minus goal difference. So that's, you know, disappointing, and you know, the main reason for that is the lack of goals they've scored this season. It's 13 in 12 games. That's a joint low at this stage of a Premier League season for Liverpool, and you know, they've got the worst chance conversion rate as well. 10.5% of their shots have scored, so it's simply not been good enough. And you mentioned Sturridge there being, says he's fit and ready. I would be surprised, like you said, if he does start this one. I think he might come off the bench and then maybe bring him back, you know, fully the week after. It'd be really important if he comes back for them. But certainly, you know, they have been, you know, unlucky with injuries. Klopp, you know, since he came in, they have struggled. You know, you've got the likes of James Milner, Jordan Ibe, who are both doubts for this one. Then we already know that the likes of, you know, Gomez, Ings, Sacco, Henderson, they're all definitely out, you know, for a good few more weeks as well. So he has been unlucky on the injury front, and certainly the goals is the one thing that has to change. You know, you mentioned Coutinho looking a bit better, Benteke linking, but you know, the simple fact is they haven't scored anywhere near enough goals this season for a, you know, a side of their caliber. You know, they should be doing a lot more. And away from home, you know, they'll come into, we mentioned that City, you've got the best home record in the league, but Liverpool have been fairly solid away from home. They've only lost one of their six away games this season, but that was also in Manchester when they, you know, lost to United in September. So won't have great memories of just, you know, making the short trip to Manchester. And it is a really tough game for them, this one. I think if Klopp can, you know, end that, you know, get back to winning ways here against City, it'd be a huge achievement for them. But yeah, very, very tough ask.
And which way do you see it going?
It's a tough one to call, actually. I think Liverpool might actually get something from the game. I think City, well, it could really depend on who's there for City, I think, because we don't know yet, you know, if Aguero, Silva, company, if they're all going to be fit. If all three of those missed out, Liverpool might have a real chance of getting something from the game. But I think it could be quite a cagey affair, and I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I agree with the injury point now. I think Aguero in particular, and Aguero and Bonny especially, if they're both out, then is Iheanacho good enough to actually really damage this Liverpool team and get City the win that most of their fans would be expecting at home against the Liverpool team, who, you know, they've been in decent form under Klopp, but they're not exactly setting the world alight. Liverpool do seem to raise their game against Manchester City now and again. Coutinho himself has got a fantastic record against them, 3 in 4 Premier League appearances against Man City, so he'll fancy his chances. Wouldn't be surprised to see Liverpool get something out of the game, but if Aguero, Silva and company all are fit, I'd probably back a Man City win, so I'll go for a 2-1 home victory. So we've got one Manchester City victory and a draw.
On to Sunday's only fixture now, and it's 5th against 6th as Spurs host West Ham. Barnes, it's another London derby for Spurs after they drew 1-1 with Arsenal last time out.
Yeah, not the worst result for them to get at the Emirates Stadium, but you know, they've probably come away from that one thinking they could have done better. They could have got all 3 points. They were the better team probably throughout over the course of the 90 minutes. They created enough chances and eventually got the goal through Harry Kane. It was a good finish from him, a clever finish to bounce it into the ground and then up over the trailing leg of Petr Cech. Pretty poor defending from Arsenal, you have to say, but Kane finished it off well. He's in decent form now after a slow start to the season, so that's positive for Spurs. But the goal they conceded, Gibbs at the back post, that'd be disappointing. Hugo Lloris will look at himself and think he probably should have kept that one out. So it's disappointing to concede that goal, but it could have been better. It could have also been worse. Giroud had a couple of really good chances towards the end of the match, which you'd expect him to take really good ones in the box, rising pretty much unchallenged to headers from close range and missing them. He should have scored one of them. So it could have been worse for Tottenham. They could have come away with nothing, which would have been very harsh. As it was, a draw was probably quite harsh, but they deserved the victory. But I think they'll come away fairly content, having taken a point from the Emirates. It keeps their unbeaten record alive, still unbeaten since the opening day of the season now. 11 Premier League games, which is a really good record, and they're starting to look like a really solid outfit throughout.
Yeah, definitely. I think the difference in that game, you know, their record against Arsenal, especially away from home in sort of the recent years, isn't very good at all. But they just look like the better team. You know, I know Arsenal are still above them in the table, but I think the difference was just that, you know, they did sort of control the game, which is so different to recent games against Arsenal. Because whenever they have beaten them in recent years, it tends to be more sort of smash and grab kind of jobs. But they did look excellent there, and it's their young core. You know, they've got such a young starting 11 this season, and those players, you know, especially the English players, you know, Eric Dier, Dele Alli, Harry Kane, they really impressed for England, you know, over the international break. All three of them started against France in the second friendly, and obviously Ali especially was the standout player with that stunning, you know, first international goal. It took the tiniest deflection it took off Laurent Koscielny, but it was probably still going into the top corner anyway. It was a fabulous hit. And, you know, Dier looked very composed. I mean, I'm still not convinced he's an international player yet, but he's very, very composed in the middle. Looks solid. Kane, you know, it's against, you know, in the game against Spain, he didn't really have much to do at all up there. But I think he does a really good job holding the ball. I think that's one thing that he's really improved on in sort of the last sort of year or so. His hold-up play with his back to goal. They're looking really excellent. And yeah, but the way Pochettino's building this team, it's got a very young core. And, you know, the defence is very solid. You know, you've got Alderweireld and Vertonghen looking very good at the back there. You know, Lloris is, you know, you probably say one of the better goalkeepers in the country. So I think it all looks really good for Spurs. And you look at where that left them in the table, that draw. They're only 5 points off the top because obviously Arsenal, who they got a point off, and then City also draw. Only three off the top four. It's their third best ever start to a Premier League season. And in the other 2 years where they've got more than this season, they've managed to get into the top four. And I think that the top four has to really be their, you know, realistic target this season, because with Chelsea doing as badly as they are, Chelsea probably look out of the running for a top four place as it is, unless they put together an incredible run of form. But Liverpool are a bit behind the pace of Spurs. And then you'd probably say City, Arsenal, United haven't been all that convincing, but you'd expect probably those three to be the top three, and then that last place. I think at the moment Spurs are the favourite to get that fourth place, and if they can do that with such a young team, you know, built around such young players, it would be a really impressive achievement for them.
Yeah, they're certainly looking a lot more formidable than they have in recent years, and I would say this is their best chance to get into the top four since the last time they did get into the top four, when Gareth Bale was obviously starting to burst onto the scene. So it is looking encouraging signs for Spurs in the immediate future. They've got a very big week coming up. Obviously, this is a huge match, Spurs and West Ham, big rivals. They've got, obviously, having played Arsenal just before the international break, they've then got a third domestic London derby in a row with Chelsea after the match, and they're big rivals as well. So it's a big domestic week, and in between this weekend's match and the home game against Chelsea, they've got a trip to Azerbaijan to play Karabag as well. That's not going to be easy. It's going to be a tough journey for them, and you know, Europa League games like that can always take something out of the team, so it'll be interesting to see how they cope with that, particularly such a young team, and particularly with some of those young players, the likes of Eric Dier and Dele Alli you mentioned earlier. They wouldn't have been used to, during the international break, going off and playing a couple of games as well and then coming back to the club, not really getting a rest. Two games in the space of 4 days, I think it was, for them, so they haven't really got a rest. It's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that. But you're back against most teams at home at the moment. They're still unbeaten at home in the Premier League. They've conceded only 2 goals in the last 5 games, only lost 2 of the last 19, and 3 of their next 4 games, including this weekend, including the match against Chelsea, are at home. Then they've got, I think it's Newcastle at home in the third one out of them. So they fancy their chances of picking up some points there. As we mentioned, Chelsea, they're in poor form, so Tottenham will really consider that game a winnable encounter, more so than in recent years. This one against West Ham, we're going to talk about their away record a bit later. It's a bit of a tricky one, but the form they're in, they'll fancy their chance of beating anyone at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And West Ham, I think Spurs will start fairly heavy favourites in this one, I think, because they, like we say, they have looked really good of late. And West Ham dropped to 6th in recent weeks. You know, they had a brilliant record after 10 games. I think they were sitting 3rd after 10 games, but it's only 1 point out of 6 in their last 2. They lost 2-0 against Watford, and then last time out before the international break, a 1-1 draw at home to Everton, which I think certainly it probably ended up a fair result. But you know, West Ham, they did, you know, at home in a game like that, if they really have sort of top 6 ambitions, the sort of games they want to be winning, and you know, they did take the lead in that one. Lanzini was a great curled finish right into the far corner, really excellent goal from them. But then they did, I think Bilic will be a little unhappy at the way they conceded the goal. You have to give full credit, I think, to Deulofeu. It was a tremendous through ball. It perfectly weighted through to Lukaku, and he coolly took it round Adrian and then slotted it home. So, I mean, but the problem was in that game, of course, you know, it was a 1-1 draw against Everton. It's a decent result, but the big news coming out of it was the Payet injury, wasn't it? You know, 3 months out, I think, now. I don't think he needs to have surgery, but it's still expected to be out for around 3 months. And it was a real crunching tackle from James McCarthy, but I think it was a fair tackle at the same time. It's just one of those where, you know, Payet was just a bit unlucky the way the contact happened, and it's obviously really damaged his ankle. But for him now to be missing for 3 months, that is just massive loss for West Ham, because he'd been involved in 35% of their goals with goals and assists. He's been an absolute star, one of the Premier League's best players since coming to the league this summer. He was a fantastic signing for West Ham, and for him to now be out for 3 months is a real big blow for them, and they'll need other players to step up now. But to lose him like that, it will really, really hurt West Ham, I think.
Yeah, it will be a huge concern. As you say, it is now up to other players. They need to fill that void, because It's still West Ham's best ever start to a Premier League season after 12 games, 21 points up in 6th in the table. They've made a fantastic start to the season. What they can't afford now is for all that hard work to be undone because they've lost Payet, who has been their standout player. He hasn't been the only player who's been impressive for West Ham so far this season, but he has been the standout. I've been particularly impressed with Lanzini. Obviously scored against Everton. He's been really good in the last couple of weeks, and I think he could be the sort of player who takes over some of the creative mantle that's going to be left by Payet. But it's going to be difficult to West Ham to reach the same sort of levels when they are missing the player who has been their best player so far this season. Away from home, though, I mentioned it earlier, alluded to it briefly, they have been so good so far this season. Only Arsenal have a better away record than them so far this season, and against big teams they tend to do even better than they do against the smaller teams because they don't get as much of the ball and they're good on the counter attack. Slaven Bilic sets them up well. They've got wins against Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City. That was in their first three away games of the season. So, you know, a trip to White Hart Lane, even with Tottenham's form, is not going to hold any fear for West Ham at all. They'll fancy their chances, just as Tottenham will, of coming away with this with 3 points.
So which way do you see it going then?
It is a difficult one, isn't it? Tottenham, they played very well against Arsenal and they're playing well in most of their games so far. West Ham, away from home, you can never write them off against one of the big teams. But I think I'm going to sit on the fence with this one. I think I'm going to go for a draw. I can see a few goals. I'm going to go for 2-2, I think.
So, yeah, I was just thinking that. I was thinking about a draw, but then I just think about the Payet thing. I think he's going to be such a big blow to lose him. He, in some of those games, he's just sort of created things all on his own and he's been a real difference maker for them. Like, I think without him there, you know, the mood around Spurs at the moment seems really good, and especially the way, you know, especially Dele Alli, he played for England and that goal. I think Spurs should come into this full of confidence, and I'm going to back them to edge it 2-1. So we've got one draw and a Spurs win.
Okay, the final game of the weekend comes at Selhurst Park on Monday night with Crystal Palace hosting Sunderland. Start with the home side, Pascal. They consigned Liverpool to their first defeat under Jurgen Klopp last time out.
Yeah, impressive victory that, and that's, you know, after three defeats in a row, it's 4 points out of six from their last two games against Manchester United and Liverpool. So really impressive total, because they seem to fall off a bit, but they're now back up to eighth in the table, looking fairly solid there. And yeah, you have to say the win over Liverpool, one of their most impressive of the season, because, like you say, you know, Klopp hadn't lost as Liverpool boss going into that game, but I think certainly Liverpool might have been affected by their efforts in midweek in Kazan. I was watching that game, they were just running after the ball, putting so much effort into chasing the ball down. You know, obviously that was away in Russia, only 3 days before as well, so perhaps a bit tired. Liverpool had a lot of injuries as well, so they couldn't, you know, make too many changes. And I wasn't too surprised to see Palace come away with the win, to be honest, because, you know, they have had some really impressive away results this season as well. But the game itself, you know, Yannick Bolasie got the first goal. It was a great finish from him. I think certainly Liverpool could have dealt with the danger a bit better, but he lashed that in with his left foot. Shows he's got two good feet. I think they'll be disappointed with the goal they conceded. It was a bit sloppy, and then obviously the ball just breaking to Coutinho at the back post. I think the defenders could have been a bit more alert there, but Coutinho stuck it away quite well. And then second half, you know, it was fairly even, I thought. I think Palace, it looked like it was going to peter out towards a draw, but then Scott Dan came up with the goal and a win for them. So really, really impressive, like I said, and for them to only concede one goal against United and Liverpool in their last two games, 4 points as well, like I mentioned, really, really impressive.
Yeah, it has been a bit of a tricky run for them. In addition to United and Liverpool, they played West Ham and Leicester in the previous two Premier League games, and while not two of the biggest names in the league, they're two of the informed teams in the league, made really good starts this season. Then, of course, they're on the end of a heavy defeat to Man City in the League Cup. So to have got 4 points from six against the likes of United and Liverpool, really good run, of form to get themselves back on track. And the good thing for them now is they've got Sunderland this weekend and then Newcastle. That's two of the bottom four in their next two games, and they'll expect more points, probably maximum points on those games. Sunderland and Newcastle both improved a bit of late, Newcastle particularly looking a little bit better now, so it's not as good a time to play them now as it was perhaps a few weeks ago, but they'll still be expecting a victory from that match. 19 points from 12 games is their best ever start to a Premier League season as well, so they've got to be pretty happy with where they're at now. I think they're looking pretty safe bet to get top half, as we expected they might do before the season. Whether a European push is maybe slightly beyond them, we'll wait and see, but for now things are looking good for Alan Pardew.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned the European thing there. If they get two wins, could put them right near the top four, because you mentioned their next two games both at home against Sunderland and Newcastle. So if they did get 6 out of 6, they could be right up near the top four, you know, depending on results elsewhere. They're currently 5 points behind there, only 2 points off the top six. So, you know, if results go their way the next couple of weeks and other teams, you know, just above them drop points, they could move into the top six, which would be obviously very, very impressive given, you know, a team like Crystal Palace, and considering where they were, you know, a year ago. Pardew, he has done a fantastic job. But You know, we've mentioned that their away form, you know, that they're usually much better away from home, and they've only won one of their last 10 league games at Selhurst Park. So even though we sort of earmarked, you know, you got two of the bottom four at home here, Sunderland and Newcastle in the next two games, if anything, they'd probably prefer to play them away from home. So it's the sort of thing they need to turn around if they're going to be a serious sort of perhaps a top six, top seven contender, because 1 in 10 at home in the league simply isn't good enough. And the fans will be demanding more because, you know, only a few thousand can go to every away game, but those, you know, 20,000 that turn up each week at Selhurst Park, they want to see more wins, and certainly Sunderland and Newcastle the next two is a very good chance to deliver some.
Yeah, and Sunderland, they're not in good form coming into this match, but it has been a bit of a mixed bag under Sam Allardyce so far. We expected him to tighten things up at the back, and certainly two of the games they've only conceded one goal. One of the games they conceded they kept a clean sheet. The other game, obviously, they conceded six against Everton, so it has been a bit of a mixed bag. The one win they have had, 3-0 against Newcastle, looks very convincing on paper, but it was far from convincing in reality. They were second best by a long way in the first half of that match until, obviously, Colaccini got that controversial red card, and then finally Sunderland got the goals, got one goal just before the break and through the penalty, and then two more in the second half, which, you know, skewed the scoreline a bit. They didn't deserve to win by three goals, arguably didn't deserve to win at all in that match. So that was not as convincing as it looked. And at the other end of the spectrum, though, you got the 1-0 defeat to West Brom, which could have gone the other way. The 1-0 defeat to Southampton, you'd say they deserved to lose that match, but they defended a lot better, particularly than they had against Everton. And the defence has been the biggest problem throughout the season. There's been some absolute calamity moments, but they were a lot better against Southampton. They were very stout in defence, which we haven't been used to seeing from them this season. There was, again, that one lapse, though, as the individual mistakes, which had cost them so much this season. That came from Jan Envia with the reckless challenge for the penalty, which was just stupid from him after defended so well against Southampton, held them at bay for so long, to just dive into a needless challenge because Bertrand was going out off the pitch anyway. It was a stupid challenge from him. Just gifted Southampton the win. Southampton did deserve the win, but, you know, you don't want to gift it to them, especially when you're in Sunderland's predicament at the moment. So it has been a mixed bag, but ultimately the record reads 3 defeats in 4 under Allardyce, and he's going to need to vastly improve that if he's going to keep them in the division.
Yeah, and I mentioned earlier that Palace, you know, haven't been great at home this season, but Sunderland, they've got the worst away record in the league. So, you know, they've only got 1 point from 6 games, and that was a 2-2 draw against the only side that are below them in the table, Aston Villa. So they've been really, really poor on the road this season. The win you mentioned against Newcastle was their only victory in their last 15 Premier League games, if you include the 3 at the end of last season, drawn 5, lost 9 of those games. So the form book doesn't read well at all for Sunderland. You know, they're only being kept off the bottom by Villa, who had lost 7 in a row before they got that draw against City last time out. So it's been really, really poor from Sunderland. And I think it'll be interesting to see who Allardyce goes for in the January transfer window, because he's surely going to try and make some signings. He's only just recently been appointed, obviously, and he's going to want to try and have his input on the club in terms of players, and, you know, the likes of, sort of, you know, maybe Kevin Nolan come in. He's a little bit past Kevin, and I'd be surprised if he had too much of an impact, but interesting to see who else they go with. We talked about maybe Charlie Austin being linked with another of the Premier League strugglers in Aston Villa, but I could see him. To be honest, I think Charlie Austin, I think sort of maybe a bottom half Premier League side would be more suited to, but if Sunderland were to go for him, I think he'd be a very good appointment, because, you know, Sunderland strikers haven't really been that consistent this season. You know, they have the odd moment here and there, but they haven't looked all that convincing. So it'd be very interesting to see who they sign, I think. And I think those kind of clubs that I've talked about, you know, we've already said that Bournemouth might need to spend money, Sunderland, Newcastle, I think they've always spent quite a bit. Newcastle, I'm not sure they need to spend as much. Newcastle, I think they've probably got the best squad of the ones of the teams down at the bottom, but the likes of Villa, Sunderland, Bournemouth, the current bottom three, I think it'd be really interesting to see who they go for in January.
And moving to this weekend, which way do you see this match going?
I think it is a difficult one to call, because, like we've said about Palace, haven't been anywhere near as good at home away from home, but then at the same time Sunderland, you know, haven't been, you know, that, like I said, they've got the worst away record. So I think it's a very tough game to call. I think Palace will obviously start the game as favourites, given, you know, their two good recent results. But I'm going to back a draw here. I think Sunderland might get something over for a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, I find it difficult to back Sunderland at the moment. I know the performance was better against Southampton defensively. They were tougher to break down, but they were still comfortably second best in that match, and they have been comfortably second best in the majority of their matches. Even that win against Newcastle, they were, as I mentioned, second best for the first half until they were playing against 10 men, so I can't really see them getting anything out of this match either. Palace, as you mentioned, their home form isn't great, but they should be able to have enough about them to get a win out of this one. I'm going to go for a 2-0 Crystal Palace victory. So we've got one home victory and a draw in this one. Okay, that's all 10 games wrapped up for this weekend. Thanks for listening, and head to sportsmore.co.uk for live coverage of every single game, plus reaction, analysis and player ratings. We'll be back next weekend when Tottenham Hotspur versus Chelsea headlines the bill, so we'll see you then.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.